בוקר טוב, איתי, בוקר טוב, רואי, בוקר טוב.
סיים את ההתעסקות עם כל הקבלה של...
אוקיי, אני אמין. אוקיי, אני אמין. קם, קם. You want to join us?
Yeah.
Great. Come take a seat. Seat early. Okay, so some interesting Rashis with one common theme. To appreciate the story of Megillas Esther in the context of the struggle of Golos and the desire for Gula. I mentioned this yesterday. Megillas Esther occurs in that 18-year period, at least according to Chazal's timeline. This is a story they want us to read. Of the first Gula began, Koresh. Already authorizes the building of the first second base of Mikdash. That process is halted by locals who are opposed to Jewish expansionism. And then sometime in that little pocket of 18 years, Megillas Esther, Nes Purim occurs, and then 18 years after, or 15, 13, 12 years after Megillas Esther, the final Gula occurs. So it's all happening in the shadow of the Gullus. That's why in the very beginning we tag Mordechai as having been part of the Golos Yechoniah, Asher Haglam Yushalayim, Imagolah Asher Haglasah, Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. So you can't just isolate Megillas Esther and read in a vacuum, to read in the larger picture. Okay, so I talked about this the other day with the Havaras, that Shmuel would begin reading Megillas Esther, Ve'af Gam Zos, Biosem, Be'eretzai Vehem, Lo Nastim, Belo Gealtem, Lechalosem, and show that the bris was still intact, even though it appeared to everyone that we had already forfeited our status as being chosen. So there are a couple very interesting Rashis about little points of this. First of all, why is he called Ish Yehudi? First time we see the word Yehudi appearing. We're all Yehudim, we're all Jews, so this is a very, very important moment. There are plenty and plenty of meanings and drashas. And now what does Rashi say? So Rashi says something very fascinating. Al Shegala Im Galut Yehuda. Because the final Galut was called Galut Yehuda, because they were the primary remaining province. Earlier, the northern tribes had been routed by Sennacherib. But this final Galut essentially exiled Yehuda. It was parts of Binyamin, but Yehuda was much more dominant. So they were called the Gullus of Yehuda. Kol Okam Shegalu im Malchei Yehuda, anyone who left, who was exiled as part of that tragedy, Hayukurim Yehudim, they were called Yehudim, Nenagoyim. So essentially, according to Rashi, the name Yehudi, the name Jew, essentially comes from not just the identification of Yehuda, but a particular event. That's when the name first stuck. And it was associated with exile. Obviously, the name Yehudi comes from the fact that Yehuda was dominant, but when did people start calling them? When did we change, probably, from the word Yisraeli to Yehudi? When we lost Yisrael, when we lost the land of Israel. There's no longer a reference point to a land. We then called Jews, which, at least in this context, was a bit of a derogatory name. You no longer have Yisrael, you no longer have your people, your land. The only thing we'll call you by is the tribe, your ethnicity that you came from. So it's a very interesting, in a way it's a little bit of a sad, on the other hand, the fact that we've thrived even in Galus and that our Yehudi identity has been able to withstand so many challenges in Galus. It is we don't take it as a source of embarrassment or mocking, but it is interesting that there's a shift in naming that occurs. There's a lot of names in the Galus Esther. Mordechai, is it a Hebrew name? Is it a Persian name? Is she Esther? Is she Hadassah? Who is this person, Achashverosh? There's a lot of identities that are being shifted because history is shifting. So Ish Yehudi, to know that he is called Yehudi because there's no longer Eretz Yisrael. And the struggle for Eretz Yisrael is part of the struggle of Megillas Esther, to create that moral and national energy to return to Eretz Yisrael. Similarly, a little bit later in the Megillah, when Esther finally makes her way in Parakeh to the inner chambers of the king, so he seems very generous. So what does he say? Ad chatzi ha-malchut v'teyas. So we think that he's offering her half of the pie. I can't give you 51% because then I abdicate my majority, but you'll get 49%. Ad chatzi ha-malchut v'teyas. So what Rashi says. Rashi says, davar shehu be'emtzo v'chatzi ha-malchut. I'll give you even something that's right in the middle of my empire. Well, what land is in the middle of the empire between Asia, Europe, Africa? It's Israel. And I'll give you the Beis HaMikdash. Shetchilu livnoso b'mei Koresh. Remember, Koresh was, in Chazal's timeline, Achashverosh's grandfather, Koresh, Daryavash Achashverosh, Daryavash the first. So Koresh had authorized, and subsequent kings after Koresh, including Koresh, had halted. So Achashverosh says, I know I've halted it, but I understand that there's something really important up for stake, up for grabs. And what's fascinating is, according to Rashi, that's what Achashverosh is referring to, even though he doesn't yet know who Esther is. This is Parakeh. She hasn't revealed her identity. She's tenacious about retaining her identity. Every day, Mordechai warns her, don't tell anyone whom you are. Sacharis doesn't even know this is a Jew standing in front of him, and yet that's the talk of the town. That's the metaphysical issue unfolding in Megillas Esther. Not just whether decrees in Shushan will or will not be instituted, but how events in Shushan will affect the rehabilitation of Eretz Yisrael. I talked about this yesterday in the Israeli share. It was a famous, famous Fas Emes that says that Esther and Purim was a pre-redemptive miracle in order to provide thrust for the final Gula. They were stuck in the mud. Gula had started. It got ground down. And now we have to start it and launch it with a pre-redemptive event to provide energy and strength. And he says, who knows if in our period we'll have a similar pre-redemptive event to create that thrust to the final Gula. One can say that's 48. It's a pre-redemptive event to then create a pathway to Gula. So these are two Rashis that speak about this is a change. We've gone into Gullus, now called Yehudim, Ish Yehudi, referred to as Yehudi. But the real prize is, can the Beis HaMikdash be built? Not the only prize. Obviously, we want to save millions and millions of Jewish life, but in a metaphysical sense, beyond the obvious, how can the Beis HaMikdash be built? Now, what's also fascinating is Shabbos. What does Shabbos have to do with Megillas Esther and Purim? So it turns out Rashi says, this is in Perek Aleph, that the request for Vashti to parade herself around these drunken idiots was made on Shabbos. It was the seventh day. It's the seventh day for us. It isn't just the seventh day of the party, it was the seventh day of Shabbos. What happened? Vashti all of a sudden had acne. All of a sudden she had tzikonot on her face. She blew up with tzara. She had an allergic reaction. Why? And that's why she was so embarrassed, because otherwise she wasn't such a tznist. She was very happy to come, but she was embarrassed. Why? Because she used to work her Jewish girls on Shabbos. All of her harlem and all the Jewish girls that assisted her, Rashi says, Fisha'isa mifashetes benos Yisrael arumos ve'osa behem melacha b'Shabbos. Nigzar alash et tepashet arum b'Shabbos. That's why this whole conspiracy evolved on Shabbos, that she should appear without clothing on. What's happening in a larger sense is that when we lose so much of our identity in Gullus, we lose our base image, we lose our homeland, we lose our language, we lose our government, we lose our flag. What anchors our identity? What remains uniquely Jewish? So kashrus is one issue. That's why Daniel in the beginning of Sefer Daniel is so adamant about not eating Buchanan's food, even though maybe his eating style is one very powerful cultural marker. And the schedule of the week, they're not keeping Shabbos, because it's always going to be different than other people, especially those who have, everyone who grew up in Chutz La'aretz has stories of grandparents and great-grandparents either working on Shabbos or not working on Shabbos, because it was so hard. In the United States, where I grew up, it was a six-day work week, and Sunday was a day off. And not 30% or 50%. You go back into the 20s and the 30s, maybe 80%, 90% of the Jews worked on Shabbos, and not the Heter, but there's no choice. People just quit it. So the struggle for Jewish survival in Gullus and Jewish identity in Gullus almost always begins around Shabbos. That's always because it's not in sync with the normal work, because it stands out, because it's not accepted, and Jews don't always succeed. Again, no one castigates anyone. And generally, the way that the Gulluses of the last two centuries work, Jews basically, I'm sure if you speak to your grandparents, I'm sure upwards of 80-90% of people work on Shabbos or drove on Shabbos. And today you still have people that drive on Shabbos who call themselves Orthodox. That's just the best. People in America go to Orthodox schools and drive there because it's still something that they feel they picked up from their grandparents. So the Shabbos struggle is beginning, but it's the struggle for Jews to fasten their identity in Gullus. And it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu helping that process along the way. I can't imagine that Vashti's assistants, after Vashti was executed, decided to continue the Shabbos torture game. She said, you know what, this is pretty dangerous. They gave the Jewish girls off for Shabbos. You no longer have to work as hard without clothing on Shabbos because they saw what occurred to Vashti. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating a Shabbos identity in Shabbos project, Shabbos identity for the Jews in Shushan, and that's why this all comes to a climax on Shabbos. One other Rashi maybe, both interesting, but one more psychological, since we've been talking about a lot of historical Rashis. What infuriated Haman? What got him so angry? So Mordechai, Chaleis, even after the party. So you think he has enough prestige and enough self-worth and esteem and title. Why is he so angry? So Rashi says, this is already in Parakeh. Anytime Haman runs home, he's angry. What happens? I'm a Rebbe Seinu. That Mordechai had some blackmail for Haman. It was a blackmail. They had been involved in some earlier war together, fighting in the Persian army. We never knew this. They had been taken captive by Persian soldiers, maybe Babylonians. But they had a past, Mordechai and Haman. And at some point in that past, Haman basically was starving to death. He didn't have food. Okay, not his fault. People go without food, especially in those days. So what he wrote is, he sold himself as a slave. He basically sold himself into bondage to eat. And Mordechai knew that because they had been together. He made a point to Rashi. He actually had the document. The document had the knowledge. And that infuriated him. Why did it infuriate him? Because people in life always try to present themselves with masks. Especially people who are megalomaniac and ambitious and want everyone to see them as perfect. The Pyro syndrome. I don't go to the bathroom. I'm a god. I'm going to hide it from people. So people are always trying to present themselves as something they're not. What infuriates them? People really see through them and know who they are. So that's why people sometimes have a hard time with their wives and their spouses. You shouldn't, because ideally, those are the people who see you for whom you really are. Not your airs, not your presumptions, not how you present yourself to society, not the champion you posture to be. They see you for real. But some people, it's really hard to accept who they are. They want to walk around believing in the myths and the images they present to the public. It's very easy to fool the public. That's why a lot of marriages have tension around. What do you mean? I'm such a great... No, you're not a great person. You're my husband. You're my wife. You just take out the garbage and do the diapers. Or that's why people who know certain realities about other people that are trying to position themselves in society in a certain way, so those people who are very ambitious are uncomfortable with people who know them really. So the real moral goal in life is not to be that person that puts on a mask, and actually people who know you for whom you are, those are healthy correctives against inflation of character. And not to be angry at Mordechai, but it's great that Mordechai knows I'm just a regular person, because that helps me remain a regular person. And Haman isn't interested. He's interested in self-deifying. Haman's interested in being a god. So it's very infuriating to him to know there's one person who always looks at him and says, I know you're a faker. I know it's just showmanship. I know there's not real. And that just really takes off Haman. Because he can fool the whole world, but he can't fool Mordechai, because Mordechai remembers him as a slave. Even if Mordechai didn't say anything, Rashi says he always is holding up the contract. Just you look at Mordechai's looking at Haman and says, I see through you. This is transparent. Everyone else, you got faked out, but I see through you. And that, of course, angers Haman. Okay, so it's a lot of Rashi's that highlight the historical context. Ish Yehudi is the first time that people called Yehudim. It's sad, but it's also the start of an era in a larger sense. Number two, Achashverosh is promising Esther, who he doesn't even know is Jewish, and he'll offer to build a base on this, because that's the talk of the town. That's what everyone is concerned with. Will the Jews return to Eretz Israel? Even if you're not Jewish, it's an important event. Koresh supported, even if he really wasn't Jewish. Number three, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helping us solidify Shabbos as a day in Galus. It's not easy, but ultimately part of the accomplishment in Megillas Esther is that Jewish Shabbos becomes something more acceptable, and not just for this next 12 years to return to Eretz Yisrael, but down the line, because of impact, and it rolls over. And number four, what angers Haman is that Mordechai knows who he is. I know who you are. You can't fool me. That makes people very angry if you're trying to assume alternate identities. Okay? Boker Tov. Boker Tov, everyone.